Idris Khan is one of the most exciting artists of his generation. Born in Birmingham in 1978, he now lives and works in North London. His studio is down a quiet residential street in a former toy factory, a space he shares with his wife, the artist Annie Morris. And it's here that I've come to meet him. His first degree was in photography. Whilst printmaking is fairly new to his practice, it's something he's been fully engaged with for the past few years.
Well, while we wait for Idris Khan, it's a hive of activity here. Two studios, Idris's and his wife's, Annie Morris. And we've entered into the studio. It's double height, lots of lovely north light, and the walls are covered in works that are in progress, prints and paintings, sculptures. It seems a very exciting place to be.
From Christea Roberts Gallery, this is Making a Mark, a podcast series exploring artists' approach to drawing and printmaking. I'm Charlotte Mullins.
I can see stamps of musical notes, of tracts of poetry, what looked like poetry, blank verse, tiles. These are lovely. Look, they're held up with bulldog clips on the wall. They look like they relate to the Four Seasons prints. Maybe these are the new works we've come to look at.
Okay. Hello.
Hey, nice to meet you. I'm Charlotte.
Hi, Charlotte. How you doing?
This is Dom.
Hey, Dom. How you doing?
I'm so sorry we've been loitering.
Oh, that's fine. How's it going?
We're meeting ahead of his major solo exhibition at the Christea Roberts Gallery. It's called Idris Khan Over and Over and is the first dedicated to his editions.
So I wondered, if those are those the very latest works that don't even have a title yet?
Exactly. They're the ones for the show in September. So
it features his latest monochrome prints, now titled After the Reflection.
I know I have to sign these proofs off today, so I think they're looking absolutely beautiful, actually.
Dancing centres of musical notes are surrounded by dense word frames.
I think of Idris's work, and particularly this new body of work, almost as sort of tablets for contemplation that allows you the space to just feel.
So yeah, how many layers have you got on these then?
Maybe one, two, three, four. So there's probably four layers for the music, and then I think around five layers for the text of the outside.
So poetry is very important to him. Philosophy, religion, music, art, they're all a big part of his life and they feed into the work. Everything's kind of absorbed, merged, which is why there's a kind of aesthetic layering but also a metaphoric layering.
I wanted to take you right back because your first body of prints, I think you created them 11 years after you graduated from the Royal College. And they're called London, the series is called London. First of all, I want to know how it came about, because it was 2012, I think, the initial germ of the idea was there, which is a very emotive year for London.
Yes.
It's the Olympics.
Yes. Yes, no, I was invited by the New York Times magazine to create a series of five images of London. And I kept thinking about it like a postcard to London. And as a tourist coming into London, where do you go? And what are the most famous sites that you go and see? London Eye, you know, Houses of Parliament, Buckingham Palace, Tower Bridge, and St. Paul's. So I went to all the different tourist postcard shops in London and bought all the postcards I could find of those places. And I re-photographed the postcards. So I had a camera set up and, you know, just postcard after postcard, making multiple exposures of each site. And then I brought them back onto the computer and cleaned them up and layered them into what you see.
Each image in the London series is an amalgam of 70 to 100 layers of postcard views of the same subject taken over many decades.
Some of these were historic, from the 30s and 40s.
Yeah, exactly. So it was really time elapsing and then collapsing. All these moments brought together into these, you know, five iconic sites.
Well, with St. Paul's, you almost get a sense of the buildings either side of St. Paul's going up and down with time.
Yeah.
And Tower Bridge has a kind of quantum time aspect to it because it's open and shut in the same image, or that's what it looks like, because you get those kind of views, but of course the bridge can move.
It can, and you know, you see it sort of opening up and then the water shimmering somehow, because you have that sort of, whether it's choppy or whether it's sort of like in the postcard, whether it was completely still, and there were little moments in each postcard that actually were more interesting than the entire thing, whether it's just a sort of little figure that I could work on, or as you said, like the water. It almost felt like the buildings were moving in some way because they were photographed at all different angles. So all these angles brought together in one image was quite a fascinating thing for me to sort of see.
Yeah, the London Eye, it looks like a kind of loop-the-loop roller coaster yeah, in the end, because people have had so many different viewpoints that it appears multiple times.
Yeah, moving around, and it gives it that beautiful energy.
My name is David Clayton Roberts, and I'm senior partner at Christea Roberts Gallery. The big theme that runs throughout Ojas's work is this idea of passing time, of using layering to capture that narrative of time. And of course, some of them, like the Houses of Parliament, Buckingham Palace, are historical, and others, like the London Eye, are essentially quite contemporary. And on the older ones, for example, Tower Bridge, you catch in certain photographs, there's obviously a boat on the river, but it's not in the other pictures because it was that one moment in time. So it's there as a very, very indistinct trace, which is really fascinating, because the more you look at these photographs, the more you begin to discern detail. But the overall experience is of this these landmarks which have been there, I've heard some of them for hundreds of years.
To realise the London series, Idris used the 19th century platinum palladium process. Through chemical transfer, the photographic image is absorbed directly into the paper rather than sitting on top. It's a very labour-intensive and costly method, but one that allows for a greater tonal range than silver gelatin printing.
They're very, very rich on the surface. They have an almost like a vintage feel. They feel like vintage photographs. Very crisp, though, very clean, with a kind of a slightly toned feel to them on this beautiful paper.
They were made with a leading UK platinum workshop, 31 Studio in Gloucestershire.
I always wanted to work with platinum prints, and I'd never done that before. And it just gave those images a whole different quality, you know. And to go from digital to negative, negative back to digital, that there was something very beautiful in that process for me that captured something, you know, a different energy, which was quite
And with your training as a photographer, you would understand what the platinum process could give you. But I think you can even go further back, go back to what your father did for a living. And your mother was involved in science too, I think. Your father was a surgeon.
Right. Yeah, so
I think you looked at x-rays.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. So that transparency and then going back to a negative is like you're making an x-ray of your original work.
It's a lovely thing to think about, that, you know, just the idea of a light box and an x-ray and looking through into a different world.
2010 was a difficult year for Idris. His mother died and he and his wife Annie lost their first child late in pregnancy. He started writing about what he was feeling as a way of dealing with the grief. Then he turned his writings into hand stamps and started creating paintings using his own words.
Grief found a way to give me this power of words in some way, to use the words and the feelings I was having at that time to start creating paintings with words. And I remember just quite fondly coming into the studio and stamping away almost a very sort of cathartically in some ways. You know, you stamp and stamp and stamp and stamp and stamp.
Many of the images Idris creates using repetitive stamping are like starbursts of text.
The shape itself evolved from the fact that I didn't want all the words to be read. So by overlaying and then sort of turning the stamp around, you'd read the outside but not read the centre. In some way, that beautiful moment where people want to know what's written and then there's a frustration because they'll never know what's written is okay, because I think in that moment, the viewer can ask themselves their own questions. By a hint of a word, you know, maybe they see, I don't know, whatever they see at the end, that those words can sort of take you down into a journey of your own thoughts and feelings and emotions at that point.
Through this window behind the Mac, I can see shelving, white shelving with blue, well, it looks like blue books on them, but they're not. They're stamps to put the lines of text on his prints and his paintings. All different widths, lengths. I wonder if we can see what they say. And this is going to be a challenge because obviously they're all in reverse, because when you use them as a stamp, they print the right way round. This one, it says, a black bird. is all that's left. Was she writing to say goodbye? If we are, is the work alive?
I've been working with these wood blocks for almost probably 12 years now, and I have over 100,000 of these particular blocks. You know, it's crazy how many we have.
And but, are they words you've written, or are they words... Because I know quite a lot of series that have been inspired by very particular books, but then you sort of translate those into your own thoughts.
Exactly, yeah. And it can be anything, really. Actually, it can be... Sometimes it can be just a newspaper article or whatever it is that day that I would then take those words or whatever and be inspired, or it could be political, it might not be political. And then mainly it's poetry.
Idris was brought up a practicing Muslim, and for the writer Hamad Nassar, there's a link between the stamping action made over and over and the repetition found in Islamic practices.
In the foreword to his mid-career retrospective that took place a couple of years ago in Milwaukee, he named that retrospective "Repeat After Me," which was a phrase that his father would use when he would take Idris to the local mosque. And sort of in that act of prayer that they would do as a family together, there was something both quite beautiful and touching. And Idris talking about it as this is the repetition that he was born into. And I recognize that idea of almost of inheriting an embodied culture. Idris grew up here in the UK, but he grew up with these multiple cultures that would wash over him. And he's, I think, refreshingly open to all that washes across and then uses it as very much part of his artistic DNA, leaning into those acts of ritualized prayer, the movements, but also thinking about them conceptually and thinking about what such repetitions do to opening up how we see, what we hear, and what we feel.
He became very well known for these large-scale pieces where he would stamp words, overlaid words, onto huge toughened glass panels, which he would then display mounted onto these amazing metal cleats, one in front of the other. So you'd get multiple panels of glass. So there's that sculptural experience of looking at words. And these were phenomenal. But in order to have one, A, you needed a reasonable amount of money, but also you needed to have your wall reinforced because they're hugely heavy and you needed a specialist team to hang them. And so I talked to her just about, would they work aesthetically, artistically for him? And could we make them work in smaller edition forms? And he was really interested by this idea. So we developed this series called The Dream Songs with him, which was his own text based on the poems of the American confessional poet, John Barryman.
Producing the editions has been incredibly complex, involving multiple layers of imagery.
He has to create an image which works both as a single panel, and then each panel has to work with the one directly behind it and the one behind that. So there's several layers of process here. He uses hand stamps. So he has these stamps made with the words and the sentences on, which are then inked. And the good thing about doing it with acrylic panels is, you know, they're see-through. So you can see through them. So you can build the image intuitively. He understands how the finished product is going to look, how the finished edition will look whilst it's being made. It kind of appears intuitively as he's making it.
And how do you choose the colour for them? Because each one is, it looks like many colours within a tonal range, but they all have a kind of overriding colour, whether that's a bright yellow or a deep red or a turquoise or whatever. Yeah. Where did that colour come from?
Now, funny enough, actually, they're not different colours.
No,
they do. So in each work, it's actually the same. It's on each layer of plexi, it's the same colour. But because of the layering, it looks more intense, and then you get light that transfers through the glass and I think gives it those beautiful different, that sort of different tone.
So visually, they're incredibly exciting. And the interesting thing about looking at these works is, from a distance, they're obviously completely abstract, and you could mistake them for just explosions of colour on a panel. But as you move nearer them, the experience changes and you begin to see that they're words. And then when you're up really close, you can actually start to read just touches of the words on the outsides. So there's a very interesting dynamic as you change position with these works. And if you look at it from the side, you're obviously aware of the physicality of the three panels, just because they just sit in cleats off the wall at different depths. So they become more sculptural from the side.
When Christea Roberts launched the Dream Song series in 2020, the response was phenomenal.
We launched them, I remember, because it was during COVID, I think. And I remember walking in a park here on one of my daily walks, and the email went out to launch them, and my phone just started pinging. And it was just clients kind of going crazy for them. So it was an amazing response, and it was a lovely way of taking his editions to the next level, I suppose, that reflected his practice.
Using the same stamping technique, Idris created another pair of wall-mounted reliefs in 2022. These are inspired by the writings of the Indian philosopher Jiddu Krishnamurti and are called Listening Without Motive and A Quiet Mind Finds What Is True.
And we launched those in Basel, Miami, because Idris has got, he's got galleries all over the world, and he shows with a very good gallery in the States. So he's very well known in America. And we had a similar response. I think they sold out within 3 hours of us putting them on the wall.
My name is Craig Burnett, and I'm a London-based writer. And I've known Idris Khan for over 20 years, I think. Idris has found a way to draw upon language and music and the images created by other people and created a unique form, which is this archaeological sedimentary form of abstraction. And so resting within every image he creates is a sense of history, is a sense of the past, but also a sense of other people and other people's viewpoints and other people's perspectives. And in that regard, there's a kind of beautifully democratic spirit to it. So in Idris's A Quiet Mind Finds What Is True, What interests me about this work is language is meant to be readable. Language is meant to be clear and to convey meaning in a transparent way. And what Idris has done here is created a kind of cloud and bringing that his mastery at creating these kind of sedimentary experiences to language. And if Krishnamurti was a master of the pithy phrase or sagacious advice, here it's inaccessible. Instead, we have this visceral experience of color and of layered color. And there's a wonderful line from Tennyson's poem In Memoriam, which is, "For words like nature half reveal and half conceal the soul within." And that phrase came to mind. And when I looked it up, amazingly, the next line in that poem is, "But for the unquiet heart and brain, a use in measured language lies." So it goes back to the use of language that isn't legible, that isn't transparent, but has its own rhythm, has a sense of form and color beyond what it means. So if language half reveals and half conceals the soul within, what Tennyson was pointing out, that through prosody, through his own poetry, he creates a new register of meaning that is somehow that soothes his grief. And Idris, in this body of work, uses language as a painterly form. And whether it's soothing his grief or serving other role, I think it's translating one form of communication into another, into a visual form. And then it creates a new object of contemplation for the viewer that, although it draws upon language, goes beyond it or certainly adjacent to it.
The Four Seasons, a series of 12 works published in 2024, saw the sustained use of musical notation in his prints. It also signalled a change in process as he began to use silkscreen. This series was inspired by Vivaldi's classical masterpiece of the same name and Idris's own experience of living in the West Sussex countryside during lockdown.
I left London, so I went out to a little place in West Sussex called Petworth. It was, you know, it was spring, and I'd never really lived in the countryside before, and I was seeing these colours just sort of pop up, and they became more and more vivid because I was just noticing them more and had more time to look. You know, so the 12 works, thinking about the four seasons, thinking about the changing seasons of that particular year that we'll all never forget. How could I sort of in some way encapsulate that year? And that year for me was in these colours, these vivid colours that I was noticing through the seasons.
Each print is a different colour, from corn yellow to aubergine, burnt orange to teal. In the middle, Idris has stamped a rectangular window with fragments of Vivaldi's score.
So that's the body of 12 prints called the Four Seasons, yes, which are beautiful, all different colours. But when you hang them as a grid. So yes, they work as a whole.
Yes.
But so to me, it was almost like a book of hours.
Ah,
when
nice
you get the kind of calendar months painted in incredible detail, like yeah, the one that for the Duke de Berry by the Limburg brothers.
Yes.
But then obviously from the Four Seasons, you get Vivaldi, which I believe was the actual source.
Well, yeah, that was the source, and that was the music that was used for each work.
The notes don't adhere to the horizontality of text, but ascend and descend, crisscrossing over each other to create an energetic centre. They are held in place by a dense frame of stamped words that surround them. These are all printed in different tones of the base colour, which gives depth and rhythm and a sense of the meditative labour required to create them.
I love looking at sheet music. My mother was a pianist and she passed away. And I sort of keep her memory alive somehow with musical paper, because that, I think it's the biggest, strongest memory that I have of her in her when she was happiest. So it's always been in my work, and I've always loved the sort of the bar, the composition of the bars within the musical notation. It was actually for a show that I had at Victoria Muir Gallery called The Seasons Turn. That was the first time I actually used musical notation as this sort of collage element in the centre. And then for the prints that we made together at Christea Roberts, that was, I didn't want to use the sheet music necessarily in the centre, and that's when I started using this window in the centre. So the sheets itself weren't there, but you were just left with the notation and the words around it. Mm. And of course, you know, when you're working in print, especially with screen printing, you can really push those colours. They're very different, you know, in terms of whether you can get this kind of real flatness to the colour and then the oiliness on top. It's a, I suppose for me, it was trying to translate the gesso surface that I use in my gesso paintings as the background. How matte can I make that feel? And then how the oil on top would even... Gesso is a beautiful surface because it sort of sucks in oil. You know, it feels like it's inside the surface rather than being on top. So for me to try and get that balance within the screen prints of it feeling like it was quite embedded as well was really important. And how dry I could make that sort of background feel, sort of matte, this like gloss, and you know, and how much the texture on the surface feels alive as well.
Which is very difficult to do. Yeah. You would imagine in a print, but you've definitely made that happen, because the ones we're looking at on the wall here, the background really does feel like it's sucked in, almost like a fresco, that depth,
oh,
the plaster.
So. Yeah.
But the window pops off the surface.
It really does. It really does. There's a lot of lovely movement within the paint and the energy. And then that beautiful feeling of lines that are made throughout the work. You know, it's not so sort of just, it's not so rigid, you know, which I really, really like. It's not rigid. You sort of can still read some of the words in there. And then there's some spaces that are, you know, allowed to come through. And, you know, the different layers sort of... create the different textures and lines and patination throughout the whole work. And then the sort of the difference between the English, the text and the music is really quite beautiful in the way that it sort of, the music feels like it's sort of jumping around, and the text itself feels like, I don't know, maybe it does feel like it's sort of jumping around as well, but not in the same way.
It has a linearity to it, across horizontally across the surface, where the notes, as you say, tend to dance.
Mm.
In the same way that abstract art almost always needs to have a subject matter, whether it's spirituality or or gestalt or something. With Idris, he's using music, which of course goes right back to the origins of abstract art with Kandinsky, and not to mention, suddenly I'm thinking of Alexander Scriabin, who was synesthetic and associated emerald green with A minor. And there is one of the Four Season prints that is more or less an emerald green. And there's an amazing object in the Scriabin Museum in Moscow where you can press a chord or a note and a light will go on. And there's something about that synesthetic experience or that translation of music into color that Idris is drawing upon in this body of work.
To make the Four Seasons, David Cleeton Roberts introduced Idris to master printmaker Peter Bennett from Studio Atelier J.I.
And between them, they developed this amazing process of building these layers of notes and words on this fantastic paper. And it was incredibly laborious to get the colour proofing right, because as you can imagine, Idris is very specific about colour dynamics. And the thing about making a print like this is that you're building it by layers, and each layer you put on, each colour you change, affects the layers already applied. And it was very important to Idris to get this balance of layers, the balance of colours right, the fact, again, that the notes shouldn't be readable as a piece of music. They're more a visual vehicle. And in the end, you know, we did this portfolio of 12 because it made sense, the Four Seasons, 12 months a year, each of the 12 was a different colour. They just looked fantastic together and individually, so we decided to present them in a box. And we said to it, just, you know, maybe we could be interesting in terms of the boxes. So the boxes were produced in different colours as well, and each colour resonated with a different colour in the portfolio. And it became this wonderful project, which, again, we launched in America to a phenomenal response.
The most important thing about these works is the actual space that's left around the music. So the window aspect, that gap around the music is the most important thing, because it allows the musical notations to sort of breathe.
Yes, and there's a vibration from leaving that edge.
Yeah.
And I think in the Starburst works too, you have the edge around the outside. You don't push the words all the way to the edge.
Exactly.
But the edge feels really, really important, like a silence.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, allowing a sort of a rest point, if you like.
Mm. What's interesting is when we look at this work, next to it, you have what looks like a very ancient pot.
Mm, it is.
And it's a beautiful cobalt blue, ultramarine blue. Around the room, blue is the dominating colour in your work. Is there a reason for that? Where does that come from?
The blue really came for me out of this moment. I was in the Louvre in Abu Dhabi, and they have this incredible blue page of the Quran. And it was from the year, I think it was the year 800. And it still exists, and it's still quite vivid, and the beautiful gold text on the surface. And it's like, oh my God, this color's like lasted all this time. And it was from that point that I thought, actually, you know what, that blue is so important. Can I make something that's very similar, but in my own sort of way? So the blue series of works, my color is sort of, it's a mixture of ultramarine blue and Prussian blue, and black pigment, slate dust, marble dust, mixed all together, and to create this kind of blue that, for me, doesn't really feel like day, and it doesn't feel like night. So it's sort of in the middle of those two. So that's sort of, I don't know, it's a lovely denseness to the colour itself.
There's also a history to ultramarine paint in the West, with everything from the robes of the Virgin to beautiful manuscripts, and particularly in the West, because the distance to get lapis lazuli from Afghanistan, perhaps, to the UK was vast. Yeah. So it has this sort of power in art history too, which, given you're now looking at art historical paintings, feels like it has a role as well.
You know, I used to make a lot of black and white work. It was pretty much all majority black and white up until a certain point. And then it was this blue, and it was almost felt like it was the natural step for me to go into that colour, because it still had the sort of, I always think of black and white images having a sort of magical quality to them, meaning that, you know, we don't see in black and white, so therefore actually it's that sort of moment where, you know, something's either lost its colour or its own colour. And then, so then for me, then it's, you know, to go then into making blue paintings felt like a sort of natural monochromatic step.
Yes.
And for it to have that same impact. And yes, there was a historical reference, especially growing up and going to a lot of mosques in Pakistan and in places like that. And then that maybe that has a sort of lasting memory on me. But, you know, just really purely on an emotional level, blue can be that color that you can, you know, it really changes your emotion when you look at it. And I think it also is that emotion. It's the emotion that you have at that time when you bring it to the blue as well, because it can either make you feel low or it can make you feel up. So I think it's that question rather than anything else.
Over the last 2 years, Idris has been creating a body of work based on old master paintings. He deconstructs each one into a palette of colours to try and pinpoint their essence.
And I started with looking at, you know, big paintings like the Mona Lisa, maybe a Caravaggio painting, Rembrandt. These paintings that have some sort of lasting memory on people.
The most recent works in the Christea Roberts exhibition are based on Monet's vast painting Water Lilies at Dusk, housed in the Musée de l'Orangerie in Paris. They include After the Setting Sun, a series of 6 monochrome reliefs where starbursts of musical notes expand outwards from each centre.
So it's that wonderful experience again, and from a distance it just looks like explosions of colour. And as you move closer to them, you'll see that each one is comprised of musical notes. And each of these notes is taken from a piece of music, which is a response to the colours, the Monet painting. So you've got this wonderful combination of music, art history, colour, all merging together in these later series.
The printed music in these most recent works, inspired by Monet's paintings, has been created by Idris himself using computer technology that ascribes specific musical notes to individual colour tones.
It's quite simple in the way that it sort of reads the tone and undulations within a painting, and then it gives a notation to space. If you're thinking about sort of like, if you think about the sky, it would give it a note, or you know, maybe the landscape, it gives it another note. So can a person stand in front of a painting and hear the sound of that painting? The sort of goal is to create an actual piece of music from these paintings. But for now, because I'm working with a composer to try and do that, but for now, what I do is I take those notes. Once I've scanned the painting, I take the notes, and then that's what you're seeing in the work. So
where you used to have type, you've now got prints of notes, like notation,
exactly,
musical notation.
That have been taken from the painting itself, yeah.
The series of 4 screen prints with letterpress called After the Reflection vibrate in twilight blues and crepuscular purples.
It's actually quite nice to see them in the studio with everything else that's going on, just because then you can get a sense of... They are slightly different to sort of the paintings that I make, you know, because I have this kind of white layer that's gone on top of it. And I usually keep the tone a similar tone to the background colour. Mm. But for the prints, I thought it would be kind of nice to do something different, sort of lift them off the background a little bit more.
This one's like a malachite green.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah,
it is. Absolutely.
Wow, and that's bright, dark turquoise.
Quite zingy, this one, yeah.
Hamad Nassar again.
Because they're using the same kind of ink that Idris uses in his hand-produced work, they have a certain physicality that is very rare, if hardly achieved, in the print multiple. So I think with what After Reflections has allowed him to do is to carry forward that way of working, of way of making textures into the print medium. And I think what it does, what it shares, is this fascination with capturing time. But what it also does in conversation with Monet's The Water Lilies is, you know, so Monet was trying to capture the light of the sun as it moves, and capturing it as energy, capturing it as color, as it sort of reflects from his water garden over a single day. And with Idris's work, puts that conversation that Monet was having with the day in a common language of color and form.
the brilliant thing about prints is that you can have several
yes.
in one place.
Yeah.
And they really do talk to each other. All your print series talk to each other.
They do, yeah. It's nice to have a sort of group of works that have harmony, but they also have a different texture, obviously, because the music's different in each one and the words are different in each one. So they have their individuality.
Kind of cornflower blue and an aubergine, a really rich wine colour.
Yeah, exactly. I would say that. Yeah, that really does feel like that. I think I wouldn't necessarily say purple or mauve, but it's kind of beautiful blue to the purple, I think.
I mean, I think Idris's work is hugely important. It's really interesting. It's the kind of work you experience in different ways. Just looking at it, it's really fascinating. And I think, you know, what people don't often want to talk about in the art world is beauty. And his works are really beautiful. I mean, they're really sensuous. That sense of layering is really hypnotic. And they capture you. They draw you in because they force you to want to look at them more closely, to dissect them. And so I think the experience of living with something by Idris is really quite special.
When you translate paintings into music, you are working with a composer now. So you effectively get a note. I mean, do you know what kind of note is a blue sky? Is there, can you go, it's high or it's low or it's rich? Or
you can play with that. So it sort of reads tone more than anything. So it sort of reads the sort of big block of colour.
And will you release that?
I hope so.
Music.
Yeah.
And would you want us, when we hear it, to think, oh, the Mona Lisa, or will it accompany the body of work?
That would be a dream. I mean, like, you know, if you're really thinking, okay, what could this thing be? I would love it that, you know, you'd go into the National Gallery and you could maybe, if I'd worked with some of those paintings, you could actually take the headphones and go and stand in front of that painting. I mean, that would be the goal. But, you know, I'm not there yet, but let's see.
And the orangery.
And the orangery anywhere in the world. Yeah, why not?
I love that. Why not, indeed.
You've been listening to Making a Mark from the Cristea Roberts Gallery, presented by me, Charlotte Mullins. To find out more about Idris Khan and the work we've been discussing, please visit www.cristearoberts.com.